tuning in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio is supported by Compass, the future of real estate in the Metro DC area and beyond. Discover more at compass.com.
Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Happy lunch break, everyone. I'm Kirsten Bourne, or Kiko for short, and this is Lunch Agenda on Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel in D.C. Every Monday at noon, I spend lunch break with advocates, doctors, parents, and more to hear their agenda for the food system. And I ask each guest for one action our listeners can take to change things for the better. You can see pictures of the show at on Instagram at KikoBuff. So last episode, we heard about how DC's Progressive Healthy Tots Act is enabling early childhood centers to source local food for the toddlers they care for. Today, we'll cap off our Food at School series with a look at two new initiatives for making school food fresher and crunchier in DC and right over the border in Virginia.
Fairfax County Public Schools Food and Nutrition Services is opening salad bars in every elementary school in the county. Having a salad bar in your school will provide students with daily offerings of fresh fruits and vegetables, setting them on a course to be lifelong healthy eaters.
Wahoo! So excited about these salad bars. I'm on the edge of my seat to learn how it's going with all the students that are getting used to having them in their schools. But first, we go to Kiko's food news. First headline for today. A huge uproar has followed the Trump administration's proposal to provide America's Harvest boxes in place of half of the funding for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as SNAP or food stamps, which serves the sixth of the American population who don't have access to adequate food. That's one-sixth. Currently, SNAP benefits are delivered in the form of cash added to an electronic benefit transfer card, EBT card, and they're spendable at most stores that sell food. Instead, the America's Harvest box would contain not freshly harvested fruits and vegetables or meat, but processed, quote-unquote, American food in cans, tins, and jars. So talk about a downgrade in a key social safety net. And this is a development that I will definitely be keeping my eye on and encourage you all to as well. Second headline for today, on a lighter note, apparently not many of the tourists in Pyeongchang for the Olympics went to the restaurants to eat local food. Such a bummer. A New York Times journalist wrote a great piece about how all the restaurants were, were prepared with extra staff hired for all these tourists. And they were ready to serve local specialties like seasonal snow crab. But many of them say visitors didn't seem to venture outside the Olympic bubble and it felt like the games weren't even going on. If you want to see the crazy videos this journalist took of sea bream and octopus so fresh that it's twitching on the plate, I have a link to it on Kiko's Food News. So check it out. Korean food is the best. What a missed opportunity. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to announce three guests who will tell us all about food in the schools where they're serving. Stay tuned.
Full Service Radio is supported by Compass. Discover Compass, America's first modern real estate company. By pairing the industry's top agents with technology, Compass delivers an incomparable client experience from the first-time buyer to the seasoned seller. Visit them today in DC, Maryland, and Virginia, or navigate compass.com day or night.
Welcome back. This is Lunch Agenda on Full Service Radio. I'm Kiko, and I'm sitting here with three guests that I'm about to introduce to talk about food at school. We've had 2 weeks of food at school, and we haven't even dived into food service at elementary schools yet. So it's time to do that. I have three ladies here with me who want to get more local produce and freshly cooked meals into schools for the health of the farm ecosystem and health of the students. Welcome, Kelsey, Morgan, and Christy.
Hello. Good morning.
These three are up against various constraints within their school systems, but they will not be stopped. And so today we'll hear about the work they're doing. I'm going to start with Christy and Morgan, who are doing this for every elementary school in Fairfax County. Morgan Maloney is the salad bar and farm-to-school program specialist with Fairfax County Public Schools Food and Nutrition Services. She helps bring the salad bar program to a new school almost every week and works to support students with integrated food education. Previously, Morgan served as the farm education director at Arcadia Center for Sustainable Food. On her side, I have Christy St. Pierre, who is the farm-to-school specialist at Fairfax County Public Schools. Christy grew up on a family farm in Central California and moved to D.C. to work on international trade issues in agriculture. After becoming a registered dietitian, she worked as an early childhood nutritionist in Fairfax schools before joining the Food and Nutrition Services team. Welcome, Christy. Welcome, Morgan. Thanks. And Morgan, I'm going to start with you. I actually met you right when I moved to D.C. At that point, you were working at Arcadia. You were teaching elementary school kids how to grow food. Why was this the right next step after Arcadia? How did that transition look for you?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I continued to notice when I was working with kids on the farm was that if they didn't have the opportunity to see these fruits and vegetables again, then the work and the education that we were doing was all for naught. And something that I became really interested in was the special opportunity of food in school. So, you know, kids, eat so much of the food they get in a day, could possibly, three of their meals could possibly come from school, from their school. So I knew that was a great opportunity to connect those things and to be really there where the food, hopefully coming from a farm, hits their plate.
Right. And as we heard in the voiceover that started this episode, Fairfax County Schools is in the second of 5 years installing salad bars in all 141 schools in the county. So I've learned, you know, I didn't know before talking about this with you too, that Fairfax is the 10th largest school district in the country. So it's exciting that if Fairfax can do it, everyone can, is kind of what I'm hearing come through this work. So paint a picture of the food in Fairfax schools before this rollout. Why did the agency feel a need to put a salad bar in 141 schools? And Christy, maybe you could answer that one since you've been along for the ride longer.
Sure. Well, but before the salad bar rollout, before really we had a new food service director come in 2015, Rodney Taylor. He came out from California and is really known nationwide for pioneering work around farm to school and around bringing salad bars in particular into elementary schools. He had done full implementation in two different school districts in Southern California. And so when he came out to Fairfax, that was one of the first initiatives that he had started. So I would say before that, Fairfax had kind of followed really what was the national trend in school food service, what can be done quickly, efficiently, a lot of heat and serve in terms of entrees. And schools around the country, as they were renovated, a lot of kitchen equipment was actually pulled out, and just warmers or ovens are left. And so there's not a lot of capacity for scratch cooking, and Fairfax had really followed that. And over the last 2 years, we've launched several initiatives to try to change those perceptions of school food and to move back toward a model of more fresh and more local ingredients.
And that's going to be something we're talking about more with you and with Kelsey in a bit. So with regard to the salad bars in particular, Morgan, I warned you that I was going to ask you to kind of paint a picture of these salad bars, what they look like, and just, you know, put us in one of those schools and what happens in that lunchroom.
Yeah, absolutely. So students actually start the lunch line at the salad bar. So it's a part of their meal no matter what, which is really awesome.
And whether they like it or not. Do most of them like it?
I mean, I've learned over time, right, that like kids will tell you all sorts of things about their feelings about food. But at every point, we have an opportunity to impact that, to change that. And honestly, just introducing them to new things is a very large step in that direction. So even if they say it's like not their favorite today, the hope is that, you know, the more they see it, and they might give it a try, and then their friend will give it a try. And
you know. I knew we had arrived in the fall when some kids came in and said the salad bar was lit. So,
Oh my god!
Yeah,
perfect. So,
well, I think we get way more kids who are really excited about it than kids who are not.
And so, they walk in. They're at the front of the line, and what do they see?
Yeah, so they pick up their tray at the salad bar, and then they move right on into making their choices. So they start with salad greens, and our salad greens are actually a mix of lettuce, kale, and spinach. And so they can choose as many fruits and veggies as they'd like, as long as they take what they can eat and fill at least one whole square with fruits or vegetables.
Square of what?
On their tray.
Okay. It's like a little pre-partitioned tray.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This is it's really helpful.
Bringing
for
me
kids.
Back. Okay.
A lot of times kids will even like, they'll like accidentally put this one slice of apple in one square and it has to be with the rest of the apple. So they'll move it over to the other square. It's so precious. But they start with salad greens. And then after that are three different vegetables. And then after that are three different fruits. And then actually the salad bar, we've designed it so that it can be a reimbursable meal all in and of itself. So there's actually two protein options, two lean protein options at the very end of the salad bar every day. So all those fruits and veggies are fresh, with the exception of beans and corn.
Which come in a can?
The beans.
Corn is frozen and then beans from the can.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a very small selection of the larger, you know. So what they might see is, you know, totally fresh broccoli that's sliced up into, you know, kid-sized bites. Pears that have been sliced, apple slices. Depending on the season, they might see peaches or plums or, like, everybody's holding out for the, like, 2 weeks of strawberries that we're going to get, you know, like, closer to the end of
Isn't
the school year.
Isn't there a school district-wide strawberries and greens day in spring every year?
That's in D.C.
Yeah. That's a D.C. thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. So I'm getting a picture. Yeah. And I know there's a training that the kids go through where they learn, is it, you know, the rules for the salad bar? I actually, think that this is an interesting little window into that. Jack, can you play the audio of this training video?
You may have noticed something different in your cafeteria. It's a salad bar.
Remember, fill your tray with three of the five stars, and one star must be a fruit or a vegetable.
So it goes on and on, but now, Morgan, sorry I messed that up. What are those five rules that they have to follow?
Yeah, so the intention behind designing the five rules was to give students as well as our kitchen staff a sort of common language when talking about behavior at the salad bar. And also just gives them a sense of like how to go through the salad bar. You know, like what are the things that I need to choose?
Because don't kids just want to do right? I mean, they want to do it right, and so you just need to give them that framework, right?
Exactly, yeah. Right. Framework's a great word for it. So number one, I already said, fill at least one square with fruits or veggies, and then take what you can eat, which is actually really about like food waste, and students are actually usually pretty great about recognizing the importance of that rule. And then it goes into respect your friends, and then respect the food, and then try something new. Those are the five rules.
So we're talking feelings here.
Well, respect is a pretty key. Both these ladies sitting next to me could probably talk about that from the standpoint of education too. But respect is a huge piece of education from kindergarten all the way through. So that I think allows kids to understand that, like, oh, the things that I do normally in the rest of the school also apply here to the salad bar.
Absolutely. So I was told that the salad bars are part of something called the smart lunchroom. Is that what it's called?
Smarter lunchrooms.
Smarter lunchrooms. Can one of you share what that means to Fairfax County Schools?
Sure. So So Smarter Lunchrooms is really a guide for changing school food and improving school food. So one of the concepts is to place fruits and vegetables as the first choice. So we've already done that with the salad bar, since that's the start of the lunch line. After they go through the salad bar, then they make their other choices. So hot entrees, things like that. Other smart lunchroom things are like slicing things into kid-sized bites. So I mentioned, you know, like broccoli, and all of the fruit is, none of the fruit is whole on the salad bar, it's all sliced. Even the kale, we're like very intentional about cutting the kale pretty small, because like giant leaves of kale I can handle, but a second grader, not so much.
Yeah.
So those are some two really big ones. Uh-huh. And that's just sort of natural with the model of salad bars that Rodney has brought to Fairfax and has been, you know, has implemented now.
Nice.
All over California.
And where did you record audio with some kids last week that we'll play right now?
Yeah, that was at a school in Centerville, actually, all the way out there. So that was a Deer Park Elementary.
Cool. So this is how Morgan sounded asking kids what they had on their plate from the salad bar there.
Starts with a T.
Tomato.
And?
And some corn.
Corn.
I always forget the name.
I know, you did a good job though.
I have oranges, tomato, and corn.
Fantastic.
Just, I mean, your job is so joyful. You know, I think that many listeners would probably love to be doing what you do. So thanks for sharing the nitty gritty. Christy, you started this work in 2016, and you've kind of since handed Morgan the reins on some of the implementation. Can you tell me about the Fairfax School District Food and Nutrition Service Office more broadly, kind of what the school food team looks like?
Yeah, so we have our director and assistant director. Mm-hmm. We have three coordinators of finance, administration, and operations.
Very important.
And then under the operations umbrella, we have our supervisors who oversee a number of schools and the staff in all those schools.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all total across. So we have 141 elementary schools, and then we have 190-ish schools total. And so we have about 1,300 staff in food and nutrition services alone in all those schools.
Wow.
So just the operations piece is pretty large.
And tell us about the sourcing for the food for all those schools generally, and how Farm to School fits in.
So generally, under procurement for the school lunch program and the school breakfast program, we have bids for all of our major items. We have a prime vendor that supplies most of our entrees, condiments, all those things. We have milk, we have a paper vendor, and we have a produce vendor. So those come up every 5 years for a bid. So on the one hand, I guess the drawback first is it can take a while to change things when you're in the midst of a contract, but when it does come up, you really have the chance to write in a lot of things that are important to you. So as we're changing our priorities, as these come up for bid, we can change the language in there and really seek, you know, suppliers that can provide what we're looking for. And as a large district, we have a lot of pool, you know, in
right,
the market.
So. Right. And has that 5-year contract come up while you've been at working there?
It hasn't
okay.
yet. I think we have 2 more years on our produce contract
okay.
right now.
And so tell me about produce and you know, how it's easier or harder to purchase from local farmers than it is with your big produce vendor.
So there's opportunities to work with our produce vendor. We have Bowie Produce, and they have been fantastic to work with us and to let us know what farms they're sourcing from, and to work with us to try to source locally when as much as we can. And then there are opportunities for smaller purchases, so we can look for specific things that we want to highlight or things that are in season. There's a small purchase threshold where we can get bids from different suppliers, so that allows us to work with local producers. And then to try something new for the first time, we can do micro purchases where we can, you know, find someone that has a new product or something new that we want to try and be able to. So it's a great way to be able to start small and then look at how we can scale up from there.
And I understand that Farm to School, as you all conceive of it, goes beyond just what is served in the cafeterias. So can you explain that initiative more broadly?
Yeah, it's really important. We want to try to have a holistic approach in Farm to School that will really ultimately, hopefully, shape kids habits so that if they start forming these habits when they're young, they carry them into adulthood, and just healthy eating becomes a normal practice, which of course then helps prevent chronic disease and just leads to a healthier life where they're able to do the things that they want to do. So we are working with community partners to build relationships, to connect what's in the lunchroom to what they're doing in the classroom, what they're hopefully doing outdoors in the classroom, in school gardens. Or there's a lot of wonderful organizations in Fairfax County that are working in schools, and we have some great opportunities to connect kids and things that they're doing as part of their curriculum to then what they see in the lunchroom. And then hopefully they go home and talk about it, and they ask their parents, hey, can we try this at home too? And we start to change not just what the kids are eating at school, but what the whole family then is eating at home.
And totally. You told me when we were talking before the show that you have a dream that each school would have a green coordinator on staff. And that's a perfect segue, actually, to introducing our third guest, Kelsey, because she works in a very special school that has a staff such as this. So Kelsey is the Food Initiative and Wellness Manager at Mundo Verde, which is D.C.'s first green-focused charter school. It's also bilingual. And for we parents with a toddler who will enter the public school lottery, it's near impossible to get into. It's Mundo Verde is actually a few blocks south of me, and it's just a thriving school community that I'm able to behold there. Kelsey's work in school food has previously involved Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution, Slow Food Pittsburgh, and the Pittsburgh Food Policy Council. So welcome, welcome, Kelsey.
Hey, good morning.
Did I just say Chelsea?
You did, but it's okay.
I'm such a stickler on names. Please forgive me.
That's great.
I don't know why that came out. I'm really sorry. Ridiculous. So tell me about the food team at Mundo Verde. You know, we were just saying that not every school has staff dedicated to teaching food, local food, sustainable food. What does it look like on your team?
Yeah, so we are a lot smaller than 141 elementary schools, so thinking about that scale and contrast is a really important note. But we have currently, as we've gone through the transition process to go from a vended school meals food service program to a full-scale from-scratch program, we currently have about 10 food service nutrition staff right now. So we have a chef, Chef Dot Steck, who we recruited from a DC restaurant, and we love her very much. A full-time nutritionist, which is really unique, I think, and a lot of the individual charter schools don't always have access to that nutritionist. And part of her job will actually be working with other schools to help them get their nutrition guidelines up to spec.
Neat.
And then we have full-time prep cooks, part-time prep cooks, dishwashers, and we have our really core food service team. And then on top of that, we have a cooking and gardening specials teacher who works and pushes into classrooms with our K through 5 education, and additionally a food core service member who's been working to connect the garden to our families, doing taste test work with students, and a really great school garden market that if you ever want to pop by Tuesdays, 3:30 to 5:30, we're serving local produce from the common market.
And you haven't even mentioned the chickens clucking about.
Oh, the chickens.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had two chickens, Coco, Luna, and Iris, in the fall, and we'll have them again in the spring.
So you already talked about the fact that you're kind of making a transition, say it again, from which approach to which approach.
Yes, so we were previously, the school did not have a full service kitchen, so it was technically a warming kitchen. So this means just hot warmers, not a real high functioning oven. And we are transitioning, we just built and completed a full scale kitchen. So we have the hood system, you know, the sparkly new freezers. And
yeah, because you were talking about some of the big equipment that you're really stoked about, like a tilt skillet maybe.
Oh, the tilt skillet's the dream,
yeah.
Right? So we can do all of the soups and pastas and beans. And, you know, as a 30-year-old lunch lady, I didn't think that that would be my golden excitement piece, but here we are.
30-year-old lunch lady is like the cool new thing. Yeah, Morgan's putting her hands in the air. Bring on the hairnets.
You betcha.
So you told me procurement is such a bear. I still haven't mastered it. Why? Why is it so hard ordering the ingredients to serve that whole school?
Right. And I think this comes from just as you enter any new territory with your work, there's a lot to learn. And I think with the charter schools, as you go self-opt and you are in charge of procuring your own food, we go through a very similar process like Fairfax does, where we have to compare bids and decide where we are going to purchase our food. So I think just learning those regulations for our school was a big process. Uh-huh. And then determining, you know, what is our menu? What are we cooking? What are we valuing about producing from where? So if we make the commitment that we're purchasing freeboard organic chicken, is that where we're going to focus our local dollars? And trying to make that determination. So I think it's a lot about priority setting and understanding the space that we have within those guidelines.
So you have a budget, a line on your budget for local food purchases?
We're breaking it down by category. Okay. So it's still not totally defined. But for instance, right now, we're working with Fells Point. And we're purchasing all of our protein, our chicken, our ground turkey from Fells Point directly.
Are they a local poultry farm? Or?
Oh, no, it's a company. It's a distribution company in D.C., okay. But they're working to help us get that local chicken. And so Great. We're working and having those conversations saying, show us all of your prices. Let's see where we can work within that.
And tell me about, I know that you've been doing your test cooking days in the new kitchen, warming it up. You and Chef Dodd have been menu planning along with your nutritionist for weeks or months.
Months.
What are some of the go-to dishes that you're going to be serving these kids day in, day out? And what are maybe off-limits dishes that you can't even consider for your menu?
Right. Well, I think when we were sitting down initially and planning, we wanted to think about just the diversity of our students and serving all different types of foods. So we're actually asking families to send us recipes so that we can consider putting that on our menu. But one of the things that's been great. A super big hit is just salsa. You know, you think about something as simple as a topping to elevate a flavor for school food is a simple fix. So we, this morning, second graders had a field trip, so we were piloting a sandwich, and Chef made a kale coleslaw chicken cheese wrap with salsa in the salsa.
Why didn't you bring those for us to have for lunch?
I know, right? Come on over.
I should add that to my guest pre-show notes. Feel free. That, yeah, they looked delicious. That right. picture was very colorful, which I know is important for kids.
Yeah.
So, to any of you, I would be curious for you to weigh in on, you know, it seems to me that home ec was in schools when I was growing up. You know, I took it in seventh grade. I learned to make snickerdoodles there and sew pillows. And then it seemed to go away maybe in the, I don't know, 2000 to 2010, 15. I'm not sure. How do you think what you're seeing in schools these days compares to the food learning environment that you were raised in?
Yeah, I mean, I think at least from my experience in home ec, you know, there was no thought about nutrition. It was, like you said, it was those cakes, it was those brownies, it was just a skill set. And without that second layer yeah. of education and what that impact means for you as a kid and as you grow to your health. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very wonderful when we look around across the DMV region to see so many people thinking about that nutritional approach and then the connection to where their food came from.
Right.
I don't think I had a single class growing up that said, hey, this tomato came from a vegetable garden. And no I went way. To like a great public school, right? But that's where it's going. And so that gives me a lot of hope.
I think that's where the biggest difference is that when you look at farm to school education across the country, that involves like nutrition education. It involves food education. So like getting kids outside to like even just get their hands in the earth, you know, like just to understand that like, oh, this is what makes a tomato. And this is where this kale comes from. I can pick it right off and eat it right now. I think that's so different than you know, anything that I had access to when I was growing up.
Christy, you might have had maybe the best in education California. In California.
Well, I didn't really learn it in school. I grew up on a farm.
Right.
I learned it at home. I learned how to cook. But I think, too, what's exciting is to see, you know, the nutrition education, the food education, and the connection to science and to even the agriculture education, and kids getting to learn about bees and have, you know, some schools that have hives or, you know, doing things with earthworms and seeing like the whole life cycle connection, and hopefully starting to think about those things and how what I'm choosing to eat, like how it was grown has an impact on the whole environment, and thinking about being really responsible citizens, like going beyond even just, you know, what the food that's on their lunch tray.
Right.
Day,
so. I remember the reduce, reuse, recycle song from fourth grade, but never thinking of food as an environmental, you know, impact. So at this point, we come to the exciting moment where you three get to inspire our listeners to do something in their day-to-day, maybe a little bit differently, that you think will have a positive change on our food system. Who wants to go first? Who wants to share their action item?
I can share. Okay. You all looked at me. Okay, I'm ready to go. So for us, one of the visions of having this resource at a school is I don't want it to close at 3 p.m. You know, the goal is not that this kitchen is limited to just our school. So my vision will be to start hosting community dinners at our school, hopefully once a month, if not twice, and a really affordable meal. I've seen this model work with other programs across the country where you can come in, have a meal, and if you have a couple extra dollars, pay it forward and pay for someone's meal so that if a neighbor comes by or a community member that would like to have a meal, it's paid for. And that we're going to keep it really fun, do some programming. The goal is to launch that in April.
So these dinners would be for community members that might not even have a student at Mundo Verde?
Yeah, correct. Anybody that wants to come, bring your family, bring your friends, come visit me.
So where can listeners get more information so they know when to come?
Beautiful. So there will be postings on the Mundo Verde Twitter. We'll update for the first community dinner. We'll post.
Perfect.
Or, you know, any other, I'll probably try to put it on different listservs.
Great, great. Yeah. So that's Kelsey inviting you to the Mundo Verde community dinners. What about you two ladies, Morgan or Christy?
So
doesn't even have to do with your work. Let me just say that. You two are humans too, just going about life.
I'm a human too. So Christy's point about making connections is kind of what inspired my action item. I challenge everyone to just plant a seed. I think now that we're coming into the springtime, we've all got this opportunity to be a part of your own food, right? To like take your food into your own hands. So whether you're planting a single seed in a tiny pot that's like hanging out your window, or a bucket in your front yard that you fill with some soil, or some space that you have, you know, just plant a seed.
Wonderful. What's the easiest seed to grow in this climate?
Oh man, I have so many favorites. So right now, the fastest that you could like probably plant pretty soon would be radish.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I thought you would say tomato or basil.
Oh man. Good. Well, you won't actually get to eat those until the summer, but right. Radish you could probably eat even before May.
Great. Mm-hmm. Crunch, crunch. Mm-hmm. Okay, Christy?
I would say find ways to contribute positively to the conversations around school food. We still hear a lot of negative things, and you know, there are things to critique, but hopefully we've given some good fodder for positive things that are going on, and it's not just Fairfax and Mundo Verde by any means. There's a lot of really exciting things going on, so find out what some of those things are in your neighborhood school, and then contribute positively to the conversation.
Great, great. Keep the momentum forward. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you. So you can keep up with Morgan and Christy's work for the listeners to tune in and follow their rollout of the salad bars and their farm to school work on Twitter at FCPS Energy Zone. That's the Fairfax County Schools account. And Kelsey, you can follow on Twitter at Kels Weisgerber. For pictures of today's interview, check out my Instagram, which is Kiko Buff. And if you share this podcast across social media, please include the hashtag Lunch Agenda. Next Monday, we have a special show coming, so make sure you tune in. I'm going to call it Food Policy Class. And for this class, our teacher will be the legal counsel to DC Council member Mary Che. She'll teach us how to effectively advocate with DC government, including a primer on the budget cycle, just in time for you to get involved this spring. I'm actually heading to testify myself tomorrow, so I'll tell you how it went. Please tune in next time, and thanks for joining us on Lunch Agenda. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.